The Mighty Whites podcast is recorded at the Don Benison Recording Studio in Allerton Bywater. For more information, visit donbenison.com or email info@donbenison.com.
Hi and welcome to the Mighty Whites podcast. First of all, yeah, you've never heard of us and we are not important in any way, shape or form. But my name's Jack, I'm 27, I've been going to Watch Leeds since I was about 6 with my dad. And I'm joined by KC.
Hello. Yeah, also been going to Leeds for about 20 years now. My first game was in the same season as Jack's. We lost 4-0 to Man United. So some would say we have improved a bit since then.
Well, it's a stretch.
Yeah.
No, my first game was December 96, Leeds 2, Chelsea 0, Brian Dean and Ian Rush. Ian Rush's only goal for Leeds at Elland Road, I'm pretty sure. I think he scored that and 2 away at Leicester, and that's it.
That's a dream team. That's when our top scorer had 8 that season.
Yeah, it's actually, seeing as I started going under George Graham, it's a wonder I even like football.
The 0-0 era.
It may have been effective, but good God, was it boring. I remember being pretty much obsessed as a 6-year-old with looking at the big screen by the south stand because it was more interesting than the football that was going on. And my dad having to go pay attention and give me a quick clip.
It was nice though. He introduced us to Robert Molinar and Martin Haydn and other random European defenders we'd never heard of.
Yeah, we don't do that now, sign random Europeans that we've never heard of.
Yeah. Well, clearly it's a strategy that it'll never pay off.
We'll put a pin in that and come back to it when we mention Matthias Klich.
Yeah.
Or Klich, or Click, or however you're supposed to pronounce it. I think it's probably Klich because his Twitter handle looks like Cliche with a 5 in it.
Basically sign Gael Cliche.
If only.
Yeah.
But anyway, we'll talk a bit about the end of last season. We won't go on about it too much because it's over and so much has changed over the summer that there's barely any point. But last season, what were your thoughts overall?
If you'd have told me we were going to finish 7th at the start of the season, I'd have bit your hand off at that. It was a great finish for us. After the years of finishing 13th, 14th, 15th, it was really nice for us to have a season that we actually had something to look forward to. We played some nice football and it was actually an entertaining season. I think we just ran out of steam towards the end of the year. I hate hearing the words that we bottled it. But I just feel like we ran out of steam towards the end and tailed off because of a lack of depth. But it was a good year.
I think people might say to you that the reason you hate hearing the term we bottled it is because we bottled it a little bit.
We did bottle a little bit, yeah.
Yeah, it wasn't great. What do you reckon was his best game last season?
As someone who doesn't live in the United Kingdom for most of the year, it's My window for our best games is fairly narrow. It's somewhere in between the middle of November and the middle of February. But I remember just being sat watching the Derby game when Derby had, you know, they have the Albino Maestro and Thomas Ince running the show. And we absolutely outplayed them, watching Pablo Hernandez and Ronaldo Vieira run rings around them. It was a fantastic win at home.
Yeah, for me, it would have been 2-0 win over Brighton at home. And to be honest, the first half of Derby was probably the best I actually saw us play all season. Last season, I didn't have a season ticket. This season, I will. But when I watched us play that game against Brighton, that was the moment when I knew for certain we were definitely getting in the playoffs.
Yeah.
And that went exactly as we expected.
What am I, but we got up to, I think it was the Reading game towards the end of the season. We lost that. I was still like, yeah, we'll be fine. We'll be in the playoffs. There's no way we're going to drop out at this point.
Yeah, there's no way Fulham are going to win like 23 of their last 24 games or whatever the stat actually was.
I wouldn't mind. It was just the fact that Fulham didn't have the decency to go on and get promoted then. They lost in the they didn't even make it to the final of the playoffs.
No, it was a really bad playoffs for Leeds because there was Fulham, who I have no issue with, who played some really good football and had a lot of good young players, and I was perfectly fine with them going up. There was Reading, who had Yapstam, who was a prick, and I hate him. There was Chef Wednesday, who I hate because it's Chef Wednesday, and there was Huddersfield, who, if I didn't have to deal with Huddersfield fans, I wouldn't dislike that much because they've always been a bit of a nothing club, but God, the fans are so annoying.
You've got to believe, though, Jack. They all believe. Believe. The annoying just keep saying believe.
The annoying thing with Huddersfield last season was that early on, I started thinking, geez, they really look good this season. And that really annoyed me. I would have loved nothing more than them getting... It was nearly perfect. I wanted them to get beat on penalties in the final. And that would have been perfect. And then next season, for them to go down. And next season, they will go down. But it doesn't really count the same when it's down from Premier League.
Yeah. It didn't help when we played Liverpool in the League Cup and Jurgen Klopp was like, well, I have no problem with Leeds, but since my mate is managing Huddersfield, boo Leeds.
I think that was balanced out, though, by them having James Milner.
Yeah.
For everything Jurgen Klopp said, oh, we really want them because my mate's at Huddersfield, he probably had James Milner going, yeah, but it's Leeds, I love Leeds, please let me go back to Leeds. Well, more accurately, please let Leeds become some good so I can go back to Leeds.
Oh, we all love James Milner. He's one of the few players that never got spoilt for us.
Yeah.
And we were all just like, when Man City won the league, well done, we've won the league, essentially. Thank you, James.
Well, last season, the decent results... Well, up until after the season finished, we thought we're pretty much down to the brilliant management team of Gary Monk and Pep Clotet. And then it's amazing how quickly we've decided that it was down to Pep Clotet.
Yeah.
And me as well, because fuck Gary Monk. Because he's a prick. I won't use the term snake because I think it's overused now. But he's a prick and I hate him.
I've said before, I don't mind Gary Monk. I just kind of looked at it and thought, yeah, there's a new owner come in. Yes, he's been given a decent contract, but he doesn't. There's no real guarantee of him staying in the job for a period of time. If what has happened in the last 2 weeks would have happened 3 months ago, I think he would have stayed. But he's gone to Middlesbrough, and as long as we finish above them, I'm pretty happy with that.
Yeah, it is amazing how this will be one of the first seasons that the Leeds-Middlesbrough game can be considered a properly big game. Because Middlesbrough fans hate us, and it's always a big game for them because they're convinced that they're a Yorkshire team. They're not really, they're sort of a Yorkshire team.
It's like the same way Hull are.
Yeah, sort of. Not real Yorkshire, not proper ones. But now we've got a reason to care as well. And not just that they're a decent side with a big budget and a lot of good players, and they'll probably be right up there. But now we've got, yeah, but if we win, we get to sing Gary, Gary, what's the score? Or fuck off, you little ginger prick. One of the two. Which one do you think's more likely?
I'm hoping that it will be singing Gary, what's the score? And at the moment, given the fact we are investing in a team, I'm quite hopeful of that. We have a decent squad already and we're adding to it. So at the moment, I can't see a reason why. But I don't know. We've still got a lot of the summer to go. The transfer window's only just open. So I think we'll know better come the first day of the season.
Speaking of our wonderful ex-manager, he'll be joined up there by James Beattie, though, like betting.
Yeah, he basically took the whole coaching staff with him. Except Pep.
Except his supposed best mate.
Yeah, who thought, I want to go.
One thing that does worry me with Beattie going is, and this is no to do with me, because I obviously don't know anything, a lot of people in the game were giving James Beattie a massive, massive amount of credit for Chris Wood's season. And I do wonder if he was that important in how well Chris Wood played, and whether him not being there could have a really detrimental effect on him.
Well, hopefully it's something that Chris Wood has just learnt from and can carry on doing this year. I mean, I think in terms of Chris Wood's form last year, it's just a combination of he had a better team around him, he was getting better support, and yes, maybe the coaching was a benefit to him as well, but, you know, you don't know. We don't know who's going to come in yet to the coaching team. I haven't, and I'm sure I will have no idea who any of these people are when they do turn up. But, you know, hopefully it's just something he's learnt from and can carry that forward into next season.
We have no idea, and we will have no idea when something else happens either. That's the kind of informed discussion we're going to get.
Wikipedia is our friend.
Well, that's enough really talking about last season, because the, well, Leeds United of last season barely exists anymore. Because it's fair to say there's been a few changes. Starting out with that Italian bloke who we've got in to replace that Italian bloke. Has there ever been two people you can describe the exact same way who are more diametrically opposed in their in how we feel about them?
It's strange as a Leeds fan, because it got to the point where when Chiellino came in, we were all starting to fear more and more about who was taking over. After you've gone through Ridsdale, through Bates, through GFH, by that point we're just hopeful that someone will do some good. And he said some really good things at the start.
Yeah, I can't pretend that when we first got Chiellino, I thought it was... I didn't think he'd be brilliant, but I thought that it was going to be a vast improvement on GFH. And there are some areas where you can argue that it was an improvement on GFH, but there's some other where you... I mean, just as a person, just the Lucy Ward stuff, and God, I just... madcap Italian prick.
People skills. He may have been lacking in them. But I think the one thing he did... I think he cared. I think, in a way, as compared to Bates, who spent most of his time thinking, or just want to build a hotel and museum and a statue of me, three of them, they will remember me.
I'll tell you what, Matt, there's no way Massimo was above building a statue of himself. If we'd have got promoted, there'd have been one there, and it'd have been so tall that it'd have looked like Billy Bremner were trying to blow him. And it would have had an 8-foot long cock, and you'd have people queuing up to do lines of coke off it. Allegedly, coke. Allegedly. I don't know if he's never done drugs.
Should we say allegedly again?
Allegedly.
There we go. It was such a bizarre time with Chiellino, from, what was it, day two, saying, I will go to the bank tomorrow and buy back the stadium. That never happened.
We'll come back to that.
He played with the pigeon detectives at the Player of the Year awards, which was an odd thing to watch. The Lucy Ward and Redfern stuff. Where on earth he found David Hockaday from? Where on earth he found Darko Milanic from? Where on earth he put Darko Milanic after those 8 games? Saying he was willing to sell to the supporters club, and then changing his mind and slagging them off at every opportunity. He was a bizarre man. But, like I say, I think he cared, but it didn't work for him. Yeah, we quickly turned on him, and it is for the best that he is no longer with us.
No, I do have no doubt that the one thing I will give him is that I don't think he did anything out of, apart from the pie tax. He did just do out of sheer being a prick. Most of it, I think he thought he was doing the right thing, and he was just like borderline personality disorder insane, and just couldn't stop shooting himself, and by proxy our football club, in the foot. He just couldn't stop himself, and I'm so glad he's gone to be replaced by, well, is Andrea Radrizzani, so far on the limited evidence we have, is Andrea Radrizzani the best person ever?
Yes. At this point, we've had a wonderful 2 weeks just coming off the end of the season of him taking over. He's been so reasonable about it. And who would have thought you wanted just something a bit reasonable from an owner?
Leeds United in a nutshell there. We've had the best 2 weeks when there's been no games.
Yes, it's brilliant. We haven't been able to be disappointed by anything on the pitch. And he said what he wants to do. And at the moment, he is delivering on a promise. It's nice. Yeah, it can only go wrong from here.
So, thing number one, bought the stadium back. Well, I say bought the stadium back. Leeds United don't own it. The company that bought Leeds also bought the stadium, but he's not charging us rent. So for all intents and purposes, Leeds United now we own the stadium.
Yeah.
I wonder if I can about $1.7 million a year in rent it saves.
Yeah, it was... Because it was... a gradual increase every year, and this was this one of the last chances for the buyback option as well before?
I think there were more years on it, but I'm not sure how many.
Yeah, I don't think there was too long left on it, so it was good timing, and he said he wanted it before the start of the season.
If I was guessing, I would have, wasn't it 2004 that we sold the stadium?
Yes.
Well, then I would have thought it would either be 2019 or 2024. It'll have been a 15 or 20
year. I believe
year.
It was 2019.
Yeah, probably.
But yeah, what is it, 20 million in total, about 17 to buy the stadium, and then the rest in costs. But yeah, we own our own stadium again for the first time since 2004 when Melvin Levy... Was it him that was in charge at the time?
It was the Krasner.
Oh, it was Gerald Krasner, wasn't it? Sorry.
Yeah, Krasner consortium.
I apologise to Melvin Levy for using his name anyway. to the Krasner regime, who sold the stadium for $8 million, and then Jacob Adler has very quickly made his money back on that investment.
Well, fair play. Well, that's, if there's one thing that you learn from this property, that's where the money
yes.
is. That and heroin.
If I want to make money in this life, I need to buy a football stadium or a training ground.
I'd start with buying a house, mate.
Well, baby steps.
The one of the good things with the money for the stadium is it doesn't count towards any of the financial fair play things at all. It's a completely separate thing. In the same way that when Man City built all that giant training complex, it doesn't count for anything. And another thing that don't count in it is that Leeds United have a women's side once again.
Yeah, it was a very long time since we've had the women involved. I think Bates got rid of them and said we didn't need women.
And Massimo wasn't going to bring them back because his record on comments on women and stuff didn't exactly strike you as a feminist.
No. I feel like he, in a football regard, would probably have got on with Sepp Blatter in terms of women in football. Get them playing in tight t-shirts and short shorts, then I'll care. But no, it's just great. We're bringing people back into the club. It's just nice that we are building a club.
To be honest, I think it was an absolute disgrace that we got rid of a women's team. I can't believe that there are still major football clubs that don't.
Yeah.
I mean, as much as I hate them, they are a massive football club. The fact that Man United haven't got a women's team is an absolute disgrace, really.
Yeah, it's not as if, and this is no disrespect to the women's game, but especially when you have the turnover that Manchester United do, running the women's team would be a drop in the ocean for them. They generate that much income to bring in a women's team and to run it. And to be honest, with the money they have, they could be successful fairly quickly. It is strange that they aren't branding themselves that way out to more women.
Anyway, we might have to take a pause soon to wash his mouths out for mentioning the scum.
Yeah, sorry.
But my fault. Another thing that's changed is LUTV is now free.
Yeah, it was... it's been a long time since I had LUTV. I had it when I was at university, so I could listen to Leeds games.
And I didn't log in on your account at all, ever.
Not at all. And... yeah, when I was meant to be working, and I wasn't working, I'd watch incredibly low-resolution videos of our Premier League highlights, some with commentary, some without. Some of them were upside down. They didn't seem to care as long as they got their $5.99 a month. But yeah, again, just it's what most teams have in terms of an on-demand service now, is that they offer it for free in terms of interviews for highlights. For most clubs, it all just goes on YouTube. So it's a big step forward for us that we're actually just giving fans something they will use, and we're still offering a service to them that they can make money out of as well.
Yeah. The other thing that will definitely get use, and depending on how well protected it is, it might get used a lot more than they think, is the outside the UK streaming service that's being run by the iFollow thing, but we're not actually in the iFollow. Think, but it's the same company.
Yeah.
It's a bit weird anyway. But they want to be a bit careful with that because I have a feeling that they might see a lot of traffic through VPNs.
Yeah, I have a feeling that could happen, but again, as someone who spends most of my time outside the UK, it is definitely a service that I would be interested in using, as opposed to trying to find a completely legal stream to watch the game on online and watching some pixels. And yeah, it's just another positive step and another way to maybe just generate a little bit of extra revenue from sources outside of the UK.
Yeah, well, that's Radwazani's main... That's how he made his money, isn't it? With sports media rights and stuff like that. So if there's one thing that we can trust him on, it's probably this.
Yeah, I think it's a subscription service that will come in handy. There are plenty of Leeds fans. I know there are plenty of Leeds fans in the US, have large followings in Scandinavia, Australia, and it can only help as well. As a PR guy, I'm going to say it can't help but build the brand for us.
God, I hate things like that. Yeah. Build the brand.
Feel dirty.
I hate corporate speak. You're going to hear me saying I hate a lot of things. I'm genuinely quite cheerful, honestly.
Yeah,
it's just not where Leeds United's involved, because they've given me loads of reasons not to be. The one other thing that Radwazani's been... well, supposedly talking about, it's mostly been just reported in the news, is that we are looking at leaving Thorpe Arch.
Yeah, the buyback option went in, was it 2011, I believe?
It was either 2011 or 2009. I can remember it was an odd number.
Because we went to Mr. Bates, decided to make a late plea to the council. And for some reason, the council thought, well, we don't entirely know where this money's going to go, so we'll pass on it. And so, yeah, again, Jacob Adler, who bought the ground and the training ground, has been making, I think it's just under £1 million in rent a year on Thorpe Arch. And now that the price will have been increased significantly from the cost at the time of the buyout, then it is looking more like it'd be an option for us to leave and set up somewhere else, which is a shame considering the setup we have there. You hear everyone that goes there talking about how good a facility it is, and it would be a shame for us to lose that.
Yeah, it's looking like there's a decent chance that it will be something over near, actually round by the ground.
Yeah, I think the idea was... there's been talk about it being where the car parks are, or somewhere around there anyway. It makes sense to have it there. I know a lot of the players will go to city centre living, especially the younger players, when they first come in. Thorpe Arch is a little bit out of the way. I think that's one of the few problems, especially given that the players tend to spread themselves out a bit, unless you're Kyle Bartley and Luke Ayling, which you're bunking up together, then, you know, it does make sense to get it a bit close to where everyone's going to get to it.
Yeah, definitely. The other major change is, well, the complete management structure at the club has completely changed, so we'll start with Big Tommy C, Tommen Christiansen.
Yes, the man we know lots and lots about.
I think it says everything about Tommen Christiansen that I work with a Greek guy, which is, I know that that's not Cyprus, but, you know, there's a lot of crossover. And he has family that live in Cyprus and stuff. And the most he could offer was, yeah, he seemed to be doing a decent job.
Yeah. Won the league, runners up in the cup. I appreciate that. Apoel are the biggest club in Cyprus. But, yeah, it seems like we've looked around, and instead of just going, he seems to be a good coach, hint hint, David Hockaday, we've put some effort into looking at the way in which he sets his teams out, and he's going to be someone who plays a style of football that at least Adria Radrazani wants us to be playing, and hopefully he's someone that can build on the squad we've had and take us to the next level.
Yeah, I always like that for a manager, he's quite young. I always prefer to have a young manager if I can help it.
Yeah, he's young and he's
suave.
Yes, suave. I'd say he's quite a good-looking man. I'm not averse to it.
Well, that was enough to get you a job under the previous one.
Yes, it was. But in his...
Hey, he's handsome. I like him. Sorry to rip off impressions from other podcasts.
But yeah, in the time he has been managing, he's got a decent win percentage, 59% with his two clubs. He's got over 100 games. It's some success. It's better again. I'm sorry, I'm riffing on David Hockaday in this. And I don't know why. He's been away a couple of years, but he's just the go-to in terms of coaches who rocked up at Leeds and their track record was nearly got relegated with Forest Green Rovers. Next season, got relegated with Forest Green Rovers.
Now, he is the only manager who I can say without any irony that I legitimately think I could have done a better job.
Yeah, at least in this situation, the research has gone in and we have found someone who has something of a winning record.
Yeah, if the things that you read are to be believed, it sounds like he had a tremendous interview when he came in and he knew the squad top to bottom and had, you know, analysis of every player and what he thought they could do better and stuff like that.
Great. It's, you can't complain about anyone who's coming in who clearly wants the job. And no disrespect to Apoel, but once I think you've won the Cypriot League, there isn't much more you can do there.
No, they had a good Europa League run, which was pretty good going. Weirdly, I did actually watch the Bilbao game because I was at work, and in the office we had a BT Sports subscription.
You should probably say what you do at this point.
Oh, well, they're not paying me enough to advertise them. I work for a major bookmaker.
There you go.
But we were watching the game in there, and it was the only one of the six. It was the best one of the 6 o'clock kickoffs. And I have to admit, in that game, they played really well. But that doesn't mean the next three games weren't awful. I have no idea, really. But I've decided that I like him and that he's going to be a really good manager.
Yeah, I'm the same with every Leeds manager that comes in. I am willing to give them a chance. Some of those managers get that chance longer than others. With Christensen, I'm willing to give him a decent chance. It's not like Neil Warnock, where I looked at him on day one and went, he could be our bastard. And then literally the next day, no, Neil Warnock's just a bastard. I wish he'd never... No.
Well, we've also brought in Victor Orta from Middlesbrough to be director of football, who, by the looks of it, signed a lot of really useful players in the Championship for him and then did the opposite in the Premier League.
Yeah.
Other than the grader, but that didn't take much scouting out. Anyone could have seen him.
Yeah, I do hope that it is not just a case of us signing a number of Spanish-based players in the same way that when Chileno first arrived, we just signed half of Serie B. But it is good that we have someone in who is looking out for the best possible signings, and our first couple of signings anyway show that we are looking further afield. And yes, you do want a good core of British players in there, but you don't just want to limit yourself to that.
It does seem to be a little bit more thought out than it was. Not that it's hard to be more thought out than Massimo Chileno, but it does seem to be a bit more thoroughly scouted.
Yeah, I'm not expecting us to make 18, 19 signings between now and the end of the transfer window. I think we have the core of a good squad, and I just think one of the things we were missing last season was depth. I mean, when Chris Wood got injured, we had Dukar and we had Antonsen, but they weren't the players we wanted to be relying on if we were without Wood. So hopefully we can add some depth to that and hopefully a bit of quality as well.
Well, there's also been a fair bit of change on the playing front already. I mean, we've lost quite a few players. Alfonso Pedraza went back, but if we didn't go up, it was apparently like an £8.5 million future fee, so that was never going to happen. Yeah. And to be honest, as much as I did think Pedraffa looked decent, he didn't look like an £8.5 million player in a million years.
No, I think he may have looked stronger if he'd have been with us from the start of the season. I think he kind of got dropped into a time when we were in a bit of a lull. But he had some good moments, but again, not enough to justify £8.5 million, whether we were in the Premiership or in the Championship.
Yeah, he certainly looked a lot better than Mo Ballow.
Yes, who, he was there.
I don't understand what happened with him, because when we signed him, I thought he was a really good signing.
He just turned up. I think he made a couple of sub appearances.
He started away at Brentford and had a terrible first half, and then played okay for 10 minutes in the second half, got subbed, and then barely played again.
Yeah, because they rocked up about the same time.
Weren't they both on deadline day in January?
I think so, yeah, I believe.
I'm not 100% on that. I think that's true.
Yeah, Mo Barrow just seemed to be there for half a season, not really utilised, which sounds a lot like another loanee we had from Swansea.
Oh, God, honestly, Matt Grimes, I cannot believe how bad he ended up being. I mean, and I didn't think he'd set the world alight or anything, but when he was a youngster, I want to say it was Cheltenham, but it could have been Exeter. But before they signed him, he was looking really good when he was really young in League Two. And maybe my perception of him was biased by the fact that he got pretty good on Football Manager. I don't know, but I expected him to at the very least be solid enough in the Championship, and instead we got a player who, it was kind of like Michael Brown in that every single thing I watched him do seemed to be wrong. Only without the benefit from Michael Brown of at least a bit of aggression and a bit of passion, he just had nothing. Matt Grimes is up there in my list of worst players for Leeds United. Not in the same way that some people are. Not in the same way as a Belushi, who is actively horrendous in everything he does. He does have a bit of footballing talent, but isn't that... Matt Grimes just seemed to be like a perpetual nothing machine. Just nothing will happen. If anything, he couldn't track a man. He couldn't tackle. He couldn't pass. He couldn't do anything. He was absolutely fucking useless. There was no redeeming factors to Matt Grimes. And he was bitching, well, not him, but like his missus and his mum and everything, bitching on Facebook about his time at Leeds United and stuff.
Yeah, I can't think of a positive thing that came from him, and he was very quickly out of the first team except for the cup games. And when you look at the rotation of the four central midfielders throughout the season between Bridcut, Phillips, O'Kane and Vieira, and Matt Grimes was never in contention for those places, and quite why he was there. And it was a little bit sad when Alex Mowat went, but we still for some reason had a stray Matt Grimes wandering around doing nothing, propping up the under-23s, I imagine. But as a loan, that just didn't work out for him at all. And
I think the only player I saw this season that looked as bad as him was actually another one that we got rid of, Billy Whitehouse. And yes, I have only ever seen him play one match, and I don't really know. But he looked like a guy I would play against behind a pub, who is better than me, but that's about it. I've never seen a player look so bad. It was supposedly a decent professional club. Because he's not. It's not like he was 17 either. Wasn't he like 21?
Yeah, I think he was 21.
Yeah. He was one of Mackay's lads, wasn't he?
Yeah.
Along with his. There's kids.
We will say
out there.
Nothing about Mackay.
There was kids out there. The twins. Yeah. Who those didn't look nearly as bad as Billy Whitehouse. That I can say.
Yeah. It's always a shame whenever you see the younger players getting released, but I mean, you watch the Sutton game and there was a few of them in there, Matt Grimes included, that just looked like they were completely out of their depth. It's sad to see them go, but hopefully they'll get picked up somewhere lower down the leagues.
Yeah, there was a few others went, weren't there? I mean, that Michael Taylor and Alex Perver went. I think Alex Perver, didn't he captain one of the youth things and was looking all right at one stage? But
yeah, and he got a bit of a write-up, I think it was at the start of this season when he first went out on loan. But I suppose when you get to, again, I think he's 21 and you're getting to that age and you're still playing for Guiseley.
Kind of like Ross Killick was.
Yeah, you know, there's still some promise there, but it just never works out.
The one youngster that I was very surprised to read a gone was Jack Van.
I can't say I know too. Bear in mind, I struggle at times to keep up with the first team, but from the things I'd heard about Jack Van, he sounded like there was some potential there.
That's what I mean. Again, it's not personal experience. I have seen him play a few times and he always looked all right. But people who see him play a lot more than me all seem to rate him. And usually when everyone seems to rate someone, you can have outliers if a couple of people rate him, but everyone seemed to have a lot of time for him.
Yeah, another one that, again, hopefully they will find their place somewhere down in the Football League. And if he's got anything, hopefully he can work his way back up again. But it's a shame, but there's always going to be those players that we just can't keep on.
Cut to 4 years' time when Jack Van makes his England debut. And we're all sat there going, oh, for fuck's sake, not again.
But we still have Liam Cooper, so it's fine.
Yeah, Liam Cooper's all right. As long as he's not first choice, I'm fine with Liam Cooper. Yeah. Ross Turnbull went, end of contract, always going to happen.
Yeah.
Solid enough as a backup, he was fine.
Yeah, once he'd become third choice keeper after Rob Green came in, we all knew he was going to go. The man has made a seriously good living as a backup goalkeeper for various teams. I'm sure he'll probably get another backup job somewhere.
Yeah, I'm sure he will. We also lost the mercurial, wonderful, potentially, Jordan Bataka.
Wow. It's only been 2 years.
I had such high hopes.
Well, YouTube is a dangerous thing.
It is.
But, yeah.
There's lots of ISIS propaganda on it. Although, in a football sense, it can also make anyone look good.
Yeah.
I'm guessing that's more what you were going for.
That is what I was going for, yeah. So not so much on the propaganda front. But yeah, Bataka, from everything we'd seen of him, I'm not saying he was the complete package as players go, but he seemed to have a bit of pace and trickery about him. And it just seemed odd that he turned up, made a handful of appearances, and then has basically been gone for 18 months.
The weird thing was with him that, I mean, he didn't have any brilliant games or anything really, but he didn't actually have terrible games when he did play. It was a bit like Hadi Sakho, only he was slightly less frustrating because Sakho gets into good positions a lot more often and his conversion rate was probably similar. But you see more of Sakho, so it frustrates you more. I am really glad we've kept him.
I mean, Bataka just didn't seem like a Steve Evans kind of player either once he'd taken over. It's sort of the similar sort of thing that you'd see Simon Grayson looking for, especially when we had Andy Robinson knocking around and knocking in 12 goals.
Andy Robinson looks like Steve Evans type of player.
Yes.
He doesn't play like one, but he did look like one.
Yeah, when Andy Robinson was scoring 12 goals for the reserves in every game, it would never get a mention. And he couldn't get in the team for love nor money, and Bataka was the same. He just didn't seem to be the thing that Evans wanted, so he's kind of cast out fairly early on. He's got himself a move to Belgium, I believe.
I can't even remember where he's got. Sint-Truiden,
yes,
I think it is.
I believe that's it.
I hope that's right, because I've dredged that up. A player that we're much sadder to see go, and I really hope that we end up splashing out some money and bringing him back, but I have to be honest, I don't see it happening. Kyle Bartley.
Yes, probably the signing of the season in terms of his impact on the defence. That's how I see it anyway.
There's a few options.
I was very high on Kyle Bartley in the way in which we'd organise ourselves defensively, and he seemed to be a big part of that. Formed a very good partnership with Janssen, and it was a shame to see him go back to Swansea. And while Monk was here, I think we all hoped that he was going to come back, but since he's gone, it either looks like he's going to stay at Swansea or follow him to Middlesbrough now. I know Paul Clement said he wanted to keep him at Swansea to see how he could do there, and with the state Swansea are in, it's definitely worth having a look at him.
He definitely should be playing at Swansea, because they spend a lot of time playing like Yordi Amat. Yodi Matt's not as good as Cal Bartley. He's just not. Alfie Mawson's a really good young defender. If they played him and Bartley, that could potentially become not a, it's hardly going to be a partnership that takes them into the top four or anything daft like that, but it's a solid Premier League partnership, I think.
I mean, after some of the defenders we've had here for the last few years, it was nice to see that we had a defender in who wasn't making too many silly mistakes. He was solid every game. He was a leader, which you don't see very often in loan players especially. And I think he had a very big impact on the team, and he is someone that we will need to replace before the start of the season.
Yeah, we do desperately need another defender. It's very important because, I mean, he will try to do it all by himself, but Pontus Janssen can't do it all by himself.
Yeah, and unfortunately, as much as I do actually like him, but Liam Cooper at the moment for me isn't the guy to fill in that space.
No, to me, he's a solid back. I have no problem if he's on bench all season and plays when someone's suspended, because he did have some good games. I mean, Janssen was suspended every other week, and yeah, when Cooper came in, he did fine most of them.
I should have memories of Sutton.
Yeah.
But no one did well that day, so I should really let him off a bit.
No, you shouldn't. That performance was an absolute embarrassment. And the last one that, well, I don't know if it's officially gone through yet, but it's going to go through any day now, probably once the tribunal's done. Charlie Taylor.
Unfortunately, we had to come to terms with that about the start of the season. It's always sad when you see a player get to the quality that Charlie Taylor is, especially in the Championship, and they make it so abundantly clear they don't want to be here. He was the best player in that team on his day, I think. And I think we all knew he was going to be heading to the Premiership. It's just a shame that we couldn't have either got that promotion and tried to talk him into staying, or if maybe Chelino had left earlier.
The balanced way of saying it is Charlie Taylor is a very good young left back who will improve even more. Burnley will play him if he's going. It looks like he's going to Burnley, and it isn't confirmed yet, but he's probably going to Burnley. He will improve there. I think if he improves as much as I expect, he'll get a move up to a solid mid-table Premier League team. I think that's about his ceiling.
Mm.
And I think he'll get two caps for England in friendlies. Only two, because Aaron Cresswell doesn't get England games and he's a really good left back. So now, the unbalanced way of saying it is Charlie Taylor refused to play for us. Fuck Charlie Taylor, he's a fucking prick. And I hope that when he comes back to Elland Road inevitably, I don't wish a really serious injury on him, because that's unfair, but I hope he gets hoofed up in the air so hard
by Pontus.
Preferably by Pontus Janssen, although I'd take it being by Thomas Christiansen. Just as he's running up the wing, going past the dugouts, and he just steps out and boots him up in air. I'd take that as well. Charlie Taylor, if he wouldn't have done that on the last day of the season and refused to play, Charlie Taylor would have gone, and I would have been disappointed that we couldn't keep hold of him. And he went from being a good young player that came up through the system, who ended up needing to move on for the good of his career, and I could have understood that and gone, good luck to Charlie Taylor, I really like him. I still like Sam Byron. He went. I still love Lewis Cook. He's gone. But no, fuck Charlie Taylor. He's a prick.
Yeah, I think Charlie Taylor is a man who has been very, very badly advised. Whether he got an injury or not in that last game, which is essentially the reason he chose to not play that final game of the season, he was going to get a Premier League move either way. And, you know, especially in a game with us against Wigan when it was nothing to play for, all the players on the field are just waiting to go on their summer holiday. There was never going to be anything happen in that game. And I stood up for Charlie Taylor at the start of the season when he'd handed in the transfer request, said he wanted to leave. And all the fan and a group of the fans were getting on his back and saying, you know, why do we need a traitor in our team and someone who doesn't want to be here? But clearly he was a quality player. But yeah, when you do something like that, you just...
I stood up from all season up until the refusing to play. Like, Berardi had been brilliant for us. And at the end of the season, I was saying, look, when we need these wins and we need a more attacking side, we should drop Berardi and put Taylor in, because as much as I like Berardi, Taylor's a better footballer. And for that, I can only apologise to Mr. Black.
We all love Gaetano.
Oh, he's brilliant. He can hoof him.
He can hoof
him. For that game, when we play him, we'll drop Erling, move Berardi over to right so he's up against him. And he can hoof him up in air. He can go in like he did against Accrington on his debut.
Yeah, mad bastard Gaetano seems to have disappeared over the last 18 months as well and becoming just a quality fullback.
Yeah, really good fullback. Which is exactly what you want.
Yeah. You know, it's nice to have at least him in that position already. I know he's not naturally a left back, but it is nice to have him there who can play in that position, and you know he's going to do it to a very good standard, especially in this league.
A lot depends on how highly they rate Tyler Denton. Because if they don't think that he's going to be good enough to play in the Championship, then I think we need to sign a left back. Because I wouldn't want just Berardi as a left back all season. Because he's a good player, but he's not a left back, he's a right back.
Yeah, and it's good competition to have. I'm a big fan of Luke Ayling and think Luke Ayling had a fantastic season this year. It's good to have those options, to add that bit of competition. When we have Luke Ayling playing well, at least, you know, he's not going to get too complacent with Berardi around, whether that's for fear of his position or for his health.
Yeah. But not all the loans that we had last season went away. We've made Hadi Sakho permanent on a 3-year deal, which some people aren't pleased with, but I personally am. Because I think there's a really good player in there. I say really good. I mean really good in the Championship. I don't think he's ever going to be...
He's nothing if not self-aware. I mean, when he came back...
Square it, Hadi.
Yes, hashtag square it, Hadi. So he at least knows what he has to work on. He's at an age where it's not impossible for him to improve on these things. And hopefully he can get another good run of games in this season. Keep working on that. And there are times when he has been a threat this season. And hopefully, again, he can work with whoever comes in and can just continue to improve on that.
Yeah, well, he's got lightning pace, and there really isn't a substitute for that. I know it's a cliche, but it's true.
Very deadly in the Championship.
Yeah, but the main thing that I thought he brought for us last season, even when he wasn't playing well, if he was on the opposition fullback for most teams, it wasn't universal, but most of the time, couldn't get forward because they were terrified of him getting in behind. Even though he'd probably missed the cross, but... I've got a lot of time for Sakho. I don't think that he's a world beater by any stretch, but I think he's really useful in this league.
Yeah, hopefully there'll be more to come from him this year, but we already have some good options on the wing as well. I'm a big fan of Kemar Roofe. See if he's in a position to even push Kemar Roofe on a bit, again, to provide that quality backup and as a threat towards the end of games, then it can only be a good thing for us.
I do like Roofe, but I prefer him when he plays in middle, to be honest.
Well,
I think he's a better... I mean, apparently, we didn't see that much of it at Leeds. I mean, striker is where he's meant to be the best, but when he played in behind when Hernandez was out, I thought he was doing a really good job there. But I've no problem with him out wide either. He's just... I think he's just a really useful player, and I think he's another one who I think will get better.
Yeah.
The main one out at wingers... The one that needs to have a big season this year, Stuart Dallas. Because last season, and I think it was all mostly down to him not really having a pre-season because of yours, and he didn't look fit for ages and ages. But I think he's another one that I think he's a much better player than he showed last season, and I really want him to show it this season. Mostly because one of my dad's mates hates him and thinks he's rubbish, and I really don't want to be wrong.
I think Dallas spent a good portion of last season as well trying to catch up in terms of match fitness. He spent some time out injured. We'd seen him before, and you know he seems not. I'm not talking in terms of quality, but in terms of his style, is Snodgrass 2.0.
He does have some similarities to him. He's not as good, but he does have some similarities.
You know, he's not the quickest of wingers, but he can.
It's quicker than Snodgrass.
It's not hard though. But yeah, he can be a threat for him. He can put a good cross in there. He got himself a few goals as well, and hopefully he can have another good season next year.
One of the main ones that we've brought in, the main one probably, the one that people will probably argue with you saying Bartley was the signing of the season over, Pontus Janssen. He's ours, and it is official after half of Twitter panicked when Torino tried to get out of the deal.
Yeah, and he is as magic as ever.
I love Pontus Janssen so much.
We all do. It's hard not to love someone who cares about every little thing during a game that Pontus does, and he, again, just brought a quality to the defence that we probably haven't seen since we were in the Premier League. I struggle to think of many since we've been outside.
On his day, he is miles too good for the Championship. It's not even a contest. There's a lot of days. When he's at his best, he could be playing in Champions League. I really genuinely believe that. He's not consistent enough to do that. He does make some mistakes, and sometimes the big ones.
Yeah.
But I would have him in every game. The one thing that I would not do ever is make him captain.
Yeah.
I think that's a disaster waiting to happen if you make him captain.
He's I think he can get a little bit carried away, and you saw in the amount of yellow cards he got last season and what he was picking them up for. Unfortunately, it's not the most reliable, but he has also admitted that he said that he is aware of this and it is something that he needs to work on. And it's good to have an international at this level, and it's for Sweden. It's not like he's turning out for Malta or someone like that. He is turning out for a quality international side.
Well, he's had some games for Sweden where he's been in ahead of that Lindelof, and haven't Scum just paid like 30 million quid for him?
Yeah, so he's...
I'm not saying Janssen's worth 30 million quid, but I am saying...
35.
I am saying that he's worth 18, 20 million quid.
There was talk of interest from Premier League clubs, which is again one of the fears that as soon as we signed him, we were going to sell him on. But the position we seem to be in at the moment doesn't look like we have any need to sell him or any desire to sell him. And long, long live Pontus Janssen.
The first player that we've spent some money on, Matthias Klick. I'm not going to sit here and pretend that I watch loads of Dutch football. He seems relatively highly rated. He's a Poland international, so he can't be... I'd say he can't be terrible, but, you know, we never know. But all the things that you read... The good thing about him coming from Holland is that every Dutch person speaks English. So I have asked Dutch people on the internet, and they all seem to think he's decent.
Yeah, he's played for a decent team.
Yeah, Leeds United.
Yes. And he got 6 goals last season, which I think one of the things we were probably missing last season were more goals from midfield.
We were desperate lacking goals from midfield.
When you get to a stage of the season when your third top goal scorer is Kyle Bartley from corners, you know you're not getting enough goals from the midfield. So, yeah, it sounds like he doesn't mind going forward and having a few shots, which is something I think we need.
We need to be very careful of that this season, actually. It's something I didn't think of till now. But the one thing that you have to give Munk and Clotet is it's the first season since we were in the Champions League where we've been pretty good on set pieces.
Yeah, we've actually been a threat this season. Yeah.
So we really need to not let that regress, because I just got used to the fact that we will concede from nearly every corner and we will never score from one of them. And suddenly last season we were some good.
Yeah, Pontus, who could defend any corner with his free roll of just you attack the ball, everyone else just make sure you're marking a man.
Yeah, it was basically like Pavel Nedved, only a big massive centre half.
Yeah, it and we needed that. You know, like I said, we weren't scoring too many goals from midfield, so you need to get the goals from somewhere, and we were scoring a fair few corners.
So we reckon about 1.5 million
around that. Yeah, I'm going off transfer marked.com So,
fuck you, who scored?
Yes, fuck you, who scored? We don't need your money unless you want to give us some. Then we'll take it. But yeah, it seems like, again, a reasonable amount of money. And we're not spending ridiculous amounts on players yet.
No, we have to think about $1.5 million now. $1.5 million now is 600 grand 3 years ago.
Yeah. It's, and you know, the Eredivisie is becoming more and more of a two-team league, but, you know, FC Twente, they're no mugs.
No, they're a decent side.
And hopefully it doesn't take him too long to adapt to playing over here.
No, that's one of the things with any, in Championship and in Premier League, players signed from Holland, it's sort of 50-50. Some of them are really, you know, for some of them are Suarez and some of them are Alfonso Alves, you know.
Yeah. And then we move on to our other incumbent.
Yeah, yeah, Felix Wiedwald. Maybe Wiedwald, don't know. I think Wiedwald because it's IE, but I'm not sure. Yeah. He played quite a few games for Bremen last season. Conceded a shit ton of goals. Like two a game, but apparently, from everything that I've read and seen, it was a bit of a, it was a bit like Paul Robinson at Leeds, in that he was always going to concede because he had no defence in front of him, just like when we had Butland on loan.
Yeah.
There's nothing you can do if you've no defence, and apparently that's a bit what Bremen were like last season.
And I think, again, it's competition for Rob Green. I have no idea what this means for Marco Silvestri.
Well, I would assume he's off back to Italy. I really hope he is, because I really don't want three goalkeepers on... I mean, I know Silvestri's not on ridiculous money, but he'll be on decent money.
He's on good money. I'd take it to not play.
Well, I suppose if he ever needs to play, they can just run a rake down his back.
With Silvestri, there is some quality in there.
Silvestri's weird because he's nearly good. Nearly. He's got the ability, but he's not mentally strong enough to be a goalkeeper at the top level. He just isn't.
No, especially when you're at a club like Leeds where any mistakes you make are going to be magnified 100 times. And, you know, I think, fortunately, he's been able to distance himself from the Charlton game a couple of years ago.
Yeah,
when they were all injured.
It's same with him. The thing is, the only one that I don't go out of my way to absolutely want to kill from that Charlton debacle is Dakara. And I still don't like Dakara. I just know that last season we did need him in the squad. I would rather that we sign someone. I would be fine with us signing the same exact footballer, just not him.
Yeah.
Because I don't like him because he refused to play and I just can't abide with it. But that goal that he scored against Forest, wasn't it, that volley?
Yes. Yeah,
it was, that was a hell of a goal.
It was the perfect volley that I don't think even Dukara was expecting to hit.
No, I've never seen, because obviously I was at the game and everyone like jumped up and celebrated and I went, hang on, was that Dukara? It was like, can you remember that one Sol Bamba scored? from outside the box, like on half volleyed at far top corner.
Yeah.
And no one could believe that he'd done it. And this was the same thing, because I've seen both as people who, they're not going to score from 20 yards. It's just not going to happen. The last signing probably won't play much, at least at first. Madga Gomez from Liverpool. To say, the main thing that I can say about Madga Gomez is that I work with a massive Liverpool fan who goes to our games and everything. And when I asked them about Madga Gomez, they said, I don't know, really. Haven't really seen him.
Yeah, I know it's more commonplace to sign players for the purpose of playing in the under-23s, but hopefully it can be someone who still has, you know, some development in him to maybe be part of the first team.
Now, I think he's 20, so there's still a little bit of time for him to pick up, but you'd want him to be in first team, or at least pushing that first team by the end of this season, really, for 20.
If he's not appearing in League Cup games or squads, then
They'll probably play him against Port Vale.
Yeah, hopefully. It's always good to have those backups there, and, you know, we have some good central, you know, some good midfield options, but you always want those younger players who can develop and get some game time and improve over a couple of years. And hopefully he could be that. Who knows?
It's won a major change, actually, in the running of the club under Radrizzani rather than under Chileno. Gomez, Sacco, Janssen, Klich, Wiedwald, all of them three-year deals. And the other good deal that we got over the summer is Ronaldo Vieira, new four-year deal. And that is such a relief compared to the constant, one-year extension that we had under the previous regime.
Yeah, and I believe it's the same sort of deal for Christiansen as well, that it's not just a turn up and...
I think it was 2 years with an option of a third, I think.
It's still a year longer than any other contract Chileno gave out. His were all 1 year with the option of a second.
Yeah, Milanic might have even been two, actually.
That's probably why he stopped giving them out then. Yeah.
I think it
changing
might have been.
Changing his mind after eight
that's
games.
That's just from memory, though, I'm not sure.
Any level of research could have told us these things, but at the same time, we weren't really planning on talking about Darko Milanic as much.
Okay, so people in this country are tired of experts.
Experts can tell you anything.
Yeah. You and your facts. You can use facts to prove anything.
Yes. Yeah, it's nice to see that we are looking more long-term with some of these signings, actually trying to build a team, and hopefully that will carry through to the players who are currently at the club as well. And we're not looking over our shoulder when a player has 18 months, just assuming they're going to be told they're leaving or being pushed out the door, like we've seen in the last few years with Byram, Taylor, and players of that ilk, where they are kind of forced out the door or forced to leave because of an unruly chairman.
Well, one person that we've kind of forgotten to mention but could well be like a new signing. I was saying we needed a new centre-half. Giuseppe Belushi is currently back because no one in Italy so far has been stupid enough to take him.
Yeah, he seems to have had a disastrous season in Italy, despite what the spreadsheets he publishes will probably tell us. But it is not a good sight for me to see Belushi back at this club, given the reputation he seems to have developed in his two seasons playing for us as something of a bad apple in the camp.
He appears to be literal poison to a football club. He is, in terms of as a person, other than Luke McCormick and Lee Hughes and people who've done things like that, Giuseppe Belushi might be the biggest arsehole in football.
He rocked up, and I still have memories of beating Huddersfield at Elland Road with Belushi going on the counter-attack, carrying the ball 40 yards and trying to chip the keeper and hitting the crossbar.
At that point, I genuinely liked Belushi nearly as much as I like Janssen now. I thought he was going to... The thing that makes Belushi even worse for me is that he is actually talented.
There is a good defender in there somewhere.
I don't know if there's a good defender. There might be a good attacking mid. But he's the most... He is basically the football version of Massimo Cellino. He cannot get out of his own way. I could go to head this. No, I know. Overhead kick. It's like a 7-year-old playing FIFA. Oh, this player's got the ball. I'm just going to run straight up the pitch. Ah, Mark, defending's boring. I don't want to do that. He is just... I hate him. I hate him with just about every fibre of my being.
He seems to have turned so many people against him and was the cause of such a great divide in the dressing room while Redfern was in charge. It worries me that he's back. I wouldn't even want him training with the under-19s or anything for fear of upsetting all of them.
No, if he is due to come back and it's going to take another week to sort out a deal somewhere else, I'd just give him leave. Just go sit at home, do whatever you want. And if we're in for a player, offer him 200 grand more and Belushi if it'll get rid of him. I just want rid of him. I don't want him anywhere near this football club.
I do hope it gets to a point where, and I don't want us to be spending money where we don't have to, but I would much rather just pay up Belushi's contract and have it end there than have him around for any period of time. Because I just can't help but feel that he is going to be a bad influence on the team.
Just get someone to take him. You know what the worst part is? You know that, think of centre-backs, and you think people who we basically got rid of for free, and that's like Tom Lees, and then we got Belushi.
Yeah. You look at some of the players we've had, and I can not forgive, but there are players who we have had in that just haven't been up to it. But at least you've seen that the effort is there, the work rate's there, and then Belushi comes in and the effort is not there. There is no passion in it. He is a very selfish player. And
he's a very selfish person.
Yes. There is nothing redeeming about his character that I've seen in his time here. And I cannot wait for the day when he is left.
Well, seeing as we clearly do need another centre-back, we mentioned, I think that we need another left-back as well. What are the other things that you think that we really need this season?
We do need that quality backup for Chris Wood. After the season he had, there is no question about who should be on the first day of the season as our starting centre-forward, but I do feel sorry for Antonsen, who came in last season, came in with quite a good reputation, but it never seemed the plan when he first signed that we were going to be playing one up top, and he just ended up out of the team, and in the form Chris Wood was in, he couldn't get back in. But you know, outside of possibly him, we're still not entirely sure. We do need that option up front as in case of an injury or a suspension to Chris Wood. I think for me, that's a key area for us, is to just add to that depth, which we were lacking towards the end of last season.
Yeah, I definitely agree with that. Because, you'd think Chris Wood, he probably won't have as good a season as last season, because he had a ridiculous season last season. But if he can get around 20, but are people around him actually chip in this time?
Because
that was the main problem. There was other issues as well, I suppose. But just the fact that we didn't get many goals from anywhere else.
Yeah, when your centre-back is your third highest goal scorer over the course of a season, it does concern you a little bit. Like, say, hopefully we can get a few more goals from midfield. And there have been times where we've seen that Phillips and Vieira are willing to take shots on from distance, and hopefully they will be encouraged to take that on a little bit more, and hopefully they could get a few more goals. But like I say, at this stage, we've still got a whole transfer window to go, so kind of just have to wait and see what turns up.
Yeah, we really could do with that. Definitely another centre-half. Another thing that I think we need to do this season, it's not as vital, but I really do think we need to do it, is Bailey Peacock-Farrell needs to go out on loan for the season.
Yeah, I mean,
someone in League 2 will want him, and a full season in League 2 is way better than playing reserve football.
He seems to have a good reputation at the moment. I've only heard good things from people who've been to watch him, so it would be good for him to get that playing time in League 1 or League 2, just get some more first-team experience in, because, like you say, playing under-23 football, it just cannot prepare you for that first-team action. So hopefully he can get some more playing time in, and would help him develop as well.
Yeah. We also need to try and ship out some players as well, because his wage budget, we won't have one of the biggest ones in the league, and if we're going to sign players, we need to get rid of some, like, because we've got Diego Arga back.
I've forgotten about Diego Arga.
Yeah, so he won't be on loads of money, but he won't be cheap, and if he's not going to be in it first team, he needs to go. As much as I still like him and wouldn't mind him in and around the first team, Luke Murphy's probably not going to get any game time. I'm weird in that I just really like Luke Murphy. I think he's a much better player.
Jack is up all night for Luke Murphy.
Yeah, I think he's a much better player than he gets credit for. But even me, with the bias towards him, wouldn't have him in the team now.
No, like I say, we've established those sort of four central midfielders, and if Clish is going into that as well, then he's very much down the pecking order, and you can't have someone on his wages just playing under 23 football each week.
Yeah, I know he signed that contract on lower terms, but I think those lower terms were still like 10 grand a week, weren't they? So.
Yeah.
Because obviously,
the power of GFH.
Diego Agüero and Murfield have to go, but I mean, in central midfield, we've got Vieira, Bridcut, Clich, O'Kane,
Phillips.
Calvin Phillips, yeah. I mean, we've got plenty of centre mids. It's kind of weird how last season we had loads of centre mids at back end of season and none of them were playing well, except for O'Kane for like the last two games when he came back in.
Yeah, because we seemed to try every combination of the central midfielders and it just never really came together, which is a shame, because especially at the start of the season, I think it was Calvin Phillips got... Did he win Young Player of the Month for the Championship?
He may have done, I didn't say that.
I think he won it for... I believe it was for around October. So there are signs that he can develop into a decent Championship midfielder.
That's another thing Leeds need, actually. I mean, needs a vast improvement from Liam Bridcut. The second half of last season, I thought he was really poor.
Yeah.
And surprisingly so, because he always struck me as a 7 out of 10 guy.
Mm.
He's never really going to have terrible games or brilliant games, and he did have some terrible games.
I'm a big fan of Liam Bridcut since he first came in on loan, and fortunately I didn't get to see any of these performances, but I do think... From a defensive point of view, I think our midfield has relied on him a lot. And again, maybe another option to him as the defensive midfielder would be good.
Yeah, well, there's a couple of players that we're very heavily linked with, to the extent that it looks like it may well happen. We've got I don't even know how you pronounce that, your first name. Gianni Alioski. It's like Isgjin or something. I have no idea how you pronounce it, but he's a young he's not even that young, but Macedonian international. The couple of things I've read say that he looks decent, but not a world beater. He'd be a rotation player, probably in the Championship.
Mm.
And the one that people are more excited about is Samuel Sayers from it's Huesca, is that, isn't it?
I think
yeah,
so.
Huesca was at Atletico Madrid before. He seems to have a lot of clubs interested in him. And I haven't read a single negative thing about him, really. And I have looked, and I haven't really seen out the mooting fee of around about £3-3.5 million, which is probably Euros.
I mean, I can't say to know too much about him, but the things I have read about him and heard, he definitely sounds like it would be a viable deal, and seems like it would be worth a go. You know, every player we bring in, you always know it's not always going to work out. But you've seen some of the players that come over and unexpectedly do well. You know, the Luciano Becchios of this world who appear from nowhere and seem to take the club by storm. So you never know with these players that are coming in, especially from the continent coming in, but hopefully he could be another positive addition. We can only wait and see, really.
Yeah, I'm really hoping that we do get him, because we need more creativity in midfield, and Pablo Hernandez is a little bit of a luxury player. I do really like him, but I wouldn't play him away from home against... I wouldn't start him away from home against pretty much anyone.
Mm.
And I wouldn't start him against any team sort of expected to be in the top six.
Mm.
Unless we're really having to go for it for any reason, and then because I do think he's really good, but I think the midfield lacks a bit of rigidity about him. And if you're playing against a team that you're not going to dominate the ball, if we're going to dominate the ball, start him, perfect. But if we're not going to dominate the ball, I'd rather start with a slightly more solid midfield and bring him on with half an hour left.
Yeah,
but Sayers appears to be a more creative player who might be able to drop into that role. Oh, and you could do the same with Roof.
It'd be good. We need those options, and anywhere where we can create more chances and add to the tally of goals we get over the course of a season is something we do need. You say, I know Hernandez chipped in with a couple of goals, Roof did, but no one really added to our goals significantly from midfield. So hopefully someone like Saez could come in and do that.
Yeah. Right. If we didn't sign anyone else, didn't sell anyone else, where do you reckon this is?
I would say somewhere between probably 7th and 10th. I don't think the team is there right now for promotion, but I don't think it's too far off. I think we'd win more games than we lost.
See, I think if we didn't get anyone, I reckon we'd be 12th to 15th. I reckon we'd be a bit lower than that. But the reason I wanted to get that is because obviously we'll be back in hopefully like 2 or 3 weeks when a bit more stuff has happened, provided we can get us ducks in a row.
With a list of more players we have never heard of before that have rocked up that are clearly going to fire us into promotion.
Oh yeah, when we will know that this guy is the man because we read it on a loosely translated Portuguese website. But no, I want to get those down because we will see then if we're any more optimistic. Because I really hope I am. I mean, I know, seeing as as of right now, it's Sunday, 2nd of July. I am buying my season ticket in the morning after my bills go out and stuff. So I really hope that I'm more optimistic in 3 weeks. But I just think if we went in now with the defence that we would have, I mean, the one thing that I would probably say is that if we didn't sign anyone else, I'd be very... If we just got a left-back and no centre-back, I'd probably play Ayling and Janssen, Berardi on right, and whoever we signed as a left-back. Because I just don't think Liam Cooper's up to it.
No.
Not game in, game out.
No, and with the defenders we do have, we need probably 2 more defenders, or central defenders anyway.
Probably because according to Twitter, slightly unpopular opinion, I don't particularly rate Louis Coyle.
I don't know. I haven't seen enough of him, unfortunately. I haven't seen enough of him. I haven't seen anything of him outside of watching brief highlights of games from last season and reading match reports.
It's great recording with someone who was in Portland most of last season.
Yeah, I've been spending most of my time in America, just spending my mornings waking up, going onto Twitter and checking to see what Phil Hay has written. That is pretty much my way of keeping up with the club.
Well, this season, we'll be more involved. Anyway, that's it for this first podcast. The Mighty Whites podcast, is that what we're going with for certain?
Yes, unless we can think of something better between now and releasing it.
Ah, well, I know I said that at the beginning, so it'll probably still be that.
Yeah.
I would say follow us on Twitter and say where they are and stuff. However, we haven't set that up yet. So you will probably see us on Twitter begging for retweets and stuff to try and get this thing going. If you do see that, be nice. Retweet it. You don't have to be nice to us. You can call us mumbling pricks if you want, who can't string a sentence together. And if you're wondering why I keep pausing, it's because we kind of had an agreement that the one swear word I would try and not say is one that I say a lot.
We've behaved today.
Yeah, this is us being nice. But anyway, to the, I'm guessing, 4 or 5 of you that have listened, thanks very much for listening, and we'll hopefully see you in a couple of weeks.
Cheers.